Okay. Good morning, Council.
Good morning, Your Honors, and may please the Court. My name is Gabriel Bottini from the Attorney General's Office of the Republic of Argentina, and I'm here with John Gleason from the law firm of Gleason & Coats.
Are you a member of an American bar?
No, I'm not.
I don't know that we can...
I have...
Can we hear this?
I have applied for a PROAC Beecher.
Well, that extends to members of other bars of other courts in this country, but I don't know. I'll hear you, Counsel.
Can I address the court, Your Honors?
Yes. I assume you're a member of an American bar, yes.
I am, sir.
Yes, sir. Mm-hmm.
The court granted Mr. Bottini admission PROAC Beecher for the purpose...
All right. It has been granted already?
Yes, sir.
All right. In that case, then, go ahead. Proceed.
Thank you very much, Your Honor. I'm going to address only three issues. Otherwise, I will rely on our written submissions. The three issues are jurisdiction, damages, and state of necessity. As to jurisdiction, you have to take into account the following. Here, what you have to consider is that we have a treaty between Argentina and the United Kingdom. You don't have a contract which contains an arbitration clause. You have a treaty. That treaty contains a unilateral offer to arbitrate, but that offer to arbitrate contains certain terms. Now, British Gas purported to accept that offer to arbitrate, but according to different terms. So we say there is no agreement to arbitrate. That's the fundamental problem here. And therefore, the arbitral tribunal exceeded its powers in the terms of the FAA.
Otherwise put, this is outside the universe of cases that the parties agreed were arbitrable. There is an agreement to arbitrate. Right? If you're just saying that doesn't cover this.
Our first submission would be that there is no agreement to arbitrate because there was, you don't have a contract here between Argentina and BG. This is a matter that is agreed between the parties and the arbitral tribunal recognized. There is no contract. There's a treaty between Argentina and the United Kingdom. That treaty contains an offer to arbitrate. But that offer to arbitrate contained a very important condition, which is you have to go first to local courts.
Court.
Right, right. And they said, I'm going to accept the offer, but without in different terms. So we say there is no agreement to arbitrate. It's like if someone offers to sell shoes for $2 a pair, and you say, I accept, but at $1 a pair. There is no agreement, no contract. Now.
But what about the enactment of the emergency law? That's what they say they couldn't have even gotten into an Argentine court.
Well, actually, again, first of all, the arbitral tribunal recognized that there was this condition, that this condition was obligatory, and that BG did not comply with it. Right. So, well, first of all, we said there is no agreement. Second, the terms of the agreement were not respected, and this was recognized by the arbitral tribunal. Third, the arbitral tribunal, while recognizing the obligation and referring to it, did not apply it. That for us is a clear case of manifest disregard of the law. You recognize the law, you refer to it, but
well,
then you don't apply it.
You have to get to manifest disregard of the law. As I understood the first line of argument here, we have a semantic difference over the question of whether there is an agreement to arbitrate. I'll put it that it's outside the agreement to arbitrate.
Mm-hmm.
But the question of arbitrability, absent clear agreement to the contrary, is normally for the court, not for the arbitrators. So that the question of arbitrability would be reviewable without a manifest disregard of the law, would it not?
Of course, of course.
Okay.
But
again,
that point, though, we ought to be clear. The argument is that by including in the treaty the agreement to the UN rules, arbitrability is a matter for the arbitrators to determine, not the courts.
Two things on that. First of all, this is you have a prior issue, which is not arbitrability, but the existence of an arbitration agreement. We say there is no arbitration
right.
agreement, and that is for you
that
to...
That was the Chief Judge's reference yeah. to your first line of mm-hmm. argument. Yeah.
Right. The second line of argument as to arbitrability, you have to take into account that the offer to arbitrate contained, first you have to go to local courts. So it was first to local courts to revise whether there was a case under the treaty. This was bypassed by British Gas. So, if you will, whether there was a genuine case under the treaty was first for the local courts to determine. And answering your question, which I didn't, the reference by the arbitral tribunal to four local provisions, you just have to look at the award. It's just eight paragraphs of the award. Those provisions, two of them just suspend injunctions and execution of certain judgments. This is in the midst of the economic crisis. None of those provisions ever, and none other provision ever, suspended the commencement of lawsuits. So there is no provision under Argentine law suspending that. The other two provisions...
So they had access to the court?
Of course,
always.
Right. And they have not contested before the district court the fact that those provisions to which the arbitral tribunal refer are inapposite in the sense that either they apply to different things or to different subjects, because they apply to the licensees, and British Gas was not the licensee, which it was a shareholder in the, it is a shareholder in the licensee.
Let me back up to what Judge Rogers was asking you, but what do you say to the language in the UNCITRAL, I don't know if people call that UNCITRAL or UNCITRAL, but that gives the tribunal the power to rule on objections that it has no jurisdiction, including any objections with respect to the existence or validity of the arbitration clause. Why does that not make this a question, the arbitrability, a question to the arbiters rather than to the court?
Again,
I jumped that step the first time around, and Judge Rogers brought it back up. So what do you say to that?
Two issues. First of all, there's no arbitration agreement, so we are before the arbitrability issue, because if there's no agreement, then that is not applicable. Second, even assuming that there was an arbitration agreement, the arbitral tribunal clearly exceeded its powers by identifying the principle and then not applying it. So under the FAA 10A4, you have the power to revise and to vacate that decision because they exceeded their powers. And I want to recall that the Supreme Court of the United States last year in Salt Nielsen stated that the foundational principle of the FAA, the foundational principle is that arbitration is a matter of consent. So if this is a foundational principle, if there is no consent, there can be no valid arbitration.
You're close to jumping the issue, though, on whether this is for the court or the arbitrators. If it's for the arbitrators, then we couldn't reverse it absent the kind of utter disregard for the law that you referred to. And the language sounds as if the UNCITRAL arbitration rules apply at all, it sounds as if that would be for the arbitrator, doesn't it?
Again, those rules would only apply if there was a valid arbitration agreement, and there is no arbitration agreement because they purportedly accepted under different terms, so there was no agreement. Argentina said, I accept to arbitrate with investors from the UK, but if they accept these conditions, including particularly, first you go to local courts. They didn't accept that, they didn't do that, so there was
no arbitration. Well, that's two different things. You ran them together in one sentence. Did they accept it and did they do it? It's two different things. Now, when did they reject that condition? Was there anything before their failure to litigate that constituted a rejection?
Well, that's very interesting. Thank you, because actually they do say that the arbitration agreement and offer is Article 8 of the treaty, which states this condition. And they rejected that condition from the very beginning. They sent letters saying we're not going to comply with that, invoking other provisions. So
when did they send that letter?
In 2003, basically, before...
Before this controversy arose or after this controversy arose?
Well, before commencing the arbitration, yes. So they sent letters saying we have a dispute, but we're not going to bring this before local courts. We're going to go directly to arbitration. So that's what they did. So basically,
at that point, they would have been taking the position that condition of the arbitration was not enforceable because of the special legislation. That's not saying that they did not accept it in an original agreement. That may not matter. They may still win or they may still lose, but That's not the same thing, is it?
Well, actually, that's not. That's rather what the arbitral tribunal said and said is that. But again, they identify the principle, say it's obligatory, say it was not complied with, and then refer to inapposite local provisions in order to not to apply it. So that we say is an excess of power under the FAA. And again, even if we go.
So yeah. Let me just ask you, the tribunal, this is paragraph 147.
Yes.
Says that as a matter of treaty interpretation, this Article 82A1 cannot be construed as an absolute impediment. And then it goes on to say that where recourse to the domestic judiciary is unilaterally prevented or hindered. Then they talk about Article 32 of the Vienna Convention. So that if it's a matter of treaty interpretation, and if the issue was properly the issue of arbitrability was properly before the tribunal, how could this court reverse that, even if the tribunal was wrong? Mm-hmm.
Again, that was not properly before the tribunal because there was no arbitration agreement. That's what first we say. Second thing is that all that argument hinges on these local provisions, after all. And those local provisions, on the face of the award, you can see, are not applicable to somebody who wants to bring a claim under a BIT. So simply, that does not justify not applying the principle.
Mm-hmm. Well, look at paragraphs 148, 149, and 150, and the actual decree is in Spanish. But
yes, I'm sorry.
But it says that the decree 214 of 02, whose purpose was to bar recourse to the courts by those whose rights were felt to be violated, and then the decree is in Spanish. As a matter of policy, decree 214/02 provided for a stay of all suits. And then it says Article 12 is the operative provision, and that's all in Spanish. And they don't then characterize what that says. But can you look at Article 12 and tell me what it says?
We did provide a translation of that in our submissions, and clearly you'll see it states simply suspends injunctions and the execution of certain judgments. There's nothing about suspending the bringing of lawsuits. And again, those provisions that apply to injunctions and execution of judgments do not apply to a judge to a claim under a treaty. There's no reference to treaty or something similar to that. So that's simply inapplicable.
But does it say in this decree that it's not applicable to treaties?
It clearly says that it's only applicable to injunctions and execution of judgments and in relation to cases brought as regards financial provisions having to do with banks. There's nothing about public utilities and even much less about shareholders of public utilities and even less about treaties. So there's nothing, no language about that. Okay. And again, no language about bringing a lawsuit. And finally, because I'm running out of time, under Argentine law, treaties prevail over domestic legislation. So if you go before a court and tell a judge, look, this prevents me from complying with a treaty, the judge must enforce a treaty. Now, let me go to damages, which is very fundamental here. What the arbitral tribunal did is take a date of valuation of July 1998, while the measure it found
What's
to
our standard of review for their decision on damages?
Well, They say they have jurisdiction. They have jurisdiction to, and I quote.
If we get to damages,
yes,
we will have gotten past the jurisdictional problem.
Yeah.
Once we get to damages, we have decided. If we get there, we've decided that there is an arbitration, that it is enforceable. If that's where we are, then we've made all those decisions. So then, what is our standard of review of the discrete question of damages as awarded by an arbitration panel?
We say two things. We say they exceeded their jurisdiction as regards the damages award, first, under the FAA. Second, their award on damages clearly goes against the public policy of the U.S. and of any other country I can think of, because what they are doing with this award is making Argentina pay not for the consequences of anything it did, but for the consequences of the economic crisis, which took place before the measures were taken.
No, I'm still wondering what you think our standard of review is for determining that they've made an error. I mean, we've enforced lots of arbitration agreements where the judges of this court might have reached a different determination. But the question was submitted to the arbitrators, and what is it here that makes this reversible by us? What's the standard of review?
The standard of review under the FAA is excess of powers. And we say it's very clear, manifest, that this tribunal, it stated that it only had jurisdiction to grant damages, to find whether measures taken by the country were contrary to the treaty. It didn't have...
Is the New York Convention relevant here?
Article
6, in terms of when a court can set aside, vacate?
Oh, yes.
That gets to the public policy
right.
issue.
Right.
Mm-hmm. And the argument, as I understand it, is, well, it's not enough that it's merely contrary to the law of the United States. It has to be something more. And it's just a district, only thing that's cited is a district court opinion saying that. And I really haven't been able to track that down at all. Do you have anything on that? You're saying this is clearly against the policy of the U.S. and any other country that you can think of because the damages are supposed to flow from the consequence of conduct by Argentina under this treaty?
Yes, well, we have cited a case of Inger v. Michigan where it states clearly that actual pecuniary loss sustained as a direct result of the wrong is the measure to be applied in fixing damages. So that's the measure. Now, what happens here is they took a date, 1998, but the date of the breach was 2002. By that time, the value of the shares had been reduced by more than two-thirds. So what they are doing is making us pay for that reduction in value. And if I conclude with this, counsel for BG stated before the district court that the fact was that they had the right to be isolated from the economic crisis. That's not what they said before the arbitral tribunal. That's not what they said before the district court at the beginning. And therefore, in their own words,
You're saying for the first time?
Yes, they said that before the district court for the first time. They said, trying to explain, Your Honor, we don't want you to have the impression that this was, in their words, a wholly irrational choice of date. I want to explain to you that we had the right to be isolated from the crisis. And what I would read to you just to conclude is, in the award, paragraph 221, The tribunal says, objecting to Argentina's submission, BG contended that it does not complain of economic conditions in Argentina, not that it takes issue with the government's general economic policies or measures. Rather, so BG, its claims relate to the measures that directly and specifically violated concrete commitments. So before the arbitral tribunal, they never said we had the right to be isolated from the economic crisis. But now they're trying to justify with the wholly irrational date the tribunal chose. Thank you.
Thank you, counsel.
Very much.
We'll hear from the appellee.
Chief Judge Santelli, Judges Henderson and Rogers, thank you so much, first of all, for accommodating our scheduling change. There were some problems in the air today. May it please the court.
Well, you know, counsel.
Yes.
When I was arguing cases and I had a schedule with the court, I used to take the red eye the night before.
And ordinarily that would have been my plan as well. But
beg your pardon?
I said ordinarily that would have been my plan as well. But
that would have been a good plan.
Thank you. Thank you. I should introduce myself. My name is Alex Hianos, and I'm here on behalf of the Epelee British Gas Group PLC and in opposition to the efforts of the Republic of Argentina to vacate the award rendered in the arbitration that British Gas and Argentina had that culminated in 2007. Members of the court, if there's one thing that is clear from the face of the governing statute, the Federal Arbitration Act, and confirmed in case after case decided by this court and the Supreme Court, it's that this court is not here to act as an appellate court with respect to the underlying dispute between British Gas and Argentina. Whether the tribunal was right or wrong in its conclusions on jurisdiction, the merits, or damages is not relevant to our discussion here for the purposes of this appeal. The narrow grounds of vacator set out in Section 10 of the FAA and confirmed by this court in cases like the Knuth against Prescott case, and the narrow grounds for non-enforcement set out in Article 5 of the New York Convention, which is captured in Chapter 2 of the FAA, those define the limits of what Judge Walton was able to consider in these proceedings, and they likewise constrain this court's review of Judge Walton's decision confirming the award and rejecting petitioner's application to vacate.
Are you reading from something? We have a rule they're not supposed to read.
Oh, I apologize.
Okay.
Okay. I'll put that to one side then.
All right. They argue,
as you heard, I mean, there was no agreement to arbitrate, period.
Yes. Well, there clearly was an agreement to arbitrate. It set out, I mean,
well,
you even heard.
Well, as the chief judge reformulated it, there had been an agreement to arbitrate on some matters, but not on this, because of this precondition.
The structure of the bit is not listed as a precondition. There's a list of things that the parties must do, and as Mr. Bottini said, Argentina made an offer to arbitrate.
What is it?
Well, it is a bizarre provision in the treaty that says that the parties.
That's another word for unusual. If it's
unusual.
If it's not a precondition, what is it?
It is
bizarre or unusual or whatever.
It is a requirement that the parties spend 18 months in the Argentine courts. But there are circumstances in which a tribunal, because after that, whether the dispute is resolved
like
or not.
Precondition.
Well, no, it's not. There's a difference between a condition precedent.
Requirement and precondition sound a lot alike in this context. I'm not sure why it's not a precondition.
Well, I guess what I would say, Your Honor, is that in many contracts there are conditions precedent, mm-hmm. but courts, and in this case arbitrators, have the authority under certain circumstances to rule that a condition precedent is obviated because of circumstances that have arisen. This tribunal made that determination.
Is the appellant correct that the statute did not preclude the bringing of the lawsuit? It just may have precluded relief, but
No, I don't think that's correct, but I also don't think that's the subject matter for our discussion, because that was the subject that was decided by the tribunal, and they were empowered with that.
Back to where we are as to whether the tribunal gets the last bite at this or not, and if
always
if this were at pardon
it always does
no it doesn't
under the rules
no it doesn't.
If the parties agree to it, then it does.
Yeah. So we have a party here who says they haven't agreed to arbitrate condition, the case unless the preconditions are met. We have language in the code, I think, that says where they've exceeded their authority, they can be reversed. It certainly is not the case that their decision is always upheld. We uphold a lot of wrong decisions by arbitrators, but we don't always. We're trying to wrestle a very distinct question here, and you keep trying to jump it.
No, I thought you hit the nail right on the head when you said if they've exceeded their authority. Mm-hmm. And my point is that the authority that they had to determine whether they had jurisdiction is precisely the authority that the parties gave them by agreeing to the, as we call it, the UNCITRAL rules, the UN rules.
And where did they agree to that? What was the documentation in the file in which they agreed to the UNCITRAL rules?
In the treaty itself, there's a specific provision that the arbitration would be governed by the UNCITRAL.
Let me ask you.
That's where in the appendix?
I'm not sure, but it's quoted in both in the appellant's brief and appellee's brief.
Go ahead.
You cite two Second Circuit cases, and there's an unpublished Ninth Circuit case saying that those UN rules, Article 21, is to be read as stating that arbitrability is for the arbitrator.
Yeah, that was the most recently. That was the Chevron against Ecuador
case.
That's
right. And it didn't cite any authority, and it just said it. Mm-hmm. And is this a generally accepted principle? Because the language is not as clear as it might have been.
I think it is, and in the commercial context, it's very common for parties. For courts to refer to, for example, in an ICC arbitration, there are specific provisions as to whether the parties have the right to go to local courts to obtain an interim relief. And if that provision is in the rules, then courts have deemed that those same that the parties have agreed that they can do that. They don't have to have it in the arbitration clause itself if they've agreed to a set of rules that include that provision. That's I think something that's generally accepted at this point. But I think the Chevron case did say it most.
Anything like a horn book or secondary source.
Ironically, one of the arbitrator that appellant's claim was evidently partial, Albert Jan Vandenberg, is the preeminent author of the treatise on the New York Convention, and he there's a pocket part that deals with that.
Well, I wasn't dealing with the New York Convention. I was just dealing with these UN rules, and that they necessarily, in Article 21, place all questions of arbitrability in the jurisdiction of the arbitrator. And maybe, candidly, if that's true, that's why Argentina's treaty had this provision in it saying, before you can arbitrate, you've got to go to our courts.
With respect, I don't think so, because the provision on 18 months stipulates that even if the parties received a judgment in the Argentine courts within 18 months, they could still go to the tribunal and posit their case for resolution. So even if BG had pursued its claim in the Argentine courts for 18 months and been defeated on all grounds, they would still be in front of the tribunal, and the tribunal would still be ruling on its jurisdiction afterwards.
That has so many hypotheticals in it. I mean, they want their courts to have a first shot at it.
But it's not a final shot.
No, not necessarily, but who knows, it may be.
Yeah.
The parties may come to some agreement. In any event, all right. I just wanted to be sure I wasn't overlooking some treatise on Article 21 of the UN rules.
No.
All right.
Although I should point out also on the subject of damages, Mr. Puttini, when he was asked what are the bases for this court to review the damages award, he mentioned both the public policy argument but also excessive powers. That's actually not an argument they made in their papers. I just wanted to clear that up. But I am happy to talk about the excessive powers point. I mean, the public policy point, and just to remind the court that there is a case, Termo Rio, that deals with what constitutes a public policy requirement for the purposes of of this review, and they talk about the most basic notions of morality and justice in this court, and I don't think
there's a lot of language in that opinion. I understand it. But I'm just trying to think of how to apply it here, where, I mean, the argument is everybody agrees damages should be based on causation. That's just, you know, a general principle.
And I guess what I would say is that the tribunal in this case actually did find that the damages were based on causation. And so even if, hypothetically, there was such a public policy as articulated by Argentina, which I don't think they've met their burden on, it would only be a matter for this court's review if the tribunal had actually found that they were awarding damages based on something that was other than causation. But
So it's this paragraph 442 where the commission or the tribunal, having referred to this July transaction, says it's the tribunal's view that this is also a better proxy of the value of BG's investment.
Right. They were looking at comparable transactions. Right. Remember, they didn't actually take the 1998 view and compare it to the 2002 view. They looked at comparable transactions. They were trying to come up with a basis for measuring the effect of Argentina's actions on BG's investment, and that is precisely what they tried to do. So they weren't saying we're trying to punish Argentina or we're trying to award some quantum of damages outside of what Argentina did to BG's investment. And I think in that circumstance, that's the limit of the review.
Yeah, I've still been looking while you've been talking for exactly where the language is wherein they adopted or submitted to the UNCITRAL rules. I find you saying they did on page 13 of your brief, but what you cite is to say the parties clearly and unmistakably referred questions of arbitrability to the tribunal via their adoption of the 1976 UNCITRAL arbitration rules. See award, paragraph 4, page 7 of the essay. Paragraph 4 says the parties failed to agree on submission of the dispute to the International Center. Doesn't say anything about what the language was under which. It just cites the UNCITRAL rules, but it doesn't tell me where they adopted it or what the language is under which they adopted it. And your whole argument for arbitration being for the arbiters depends upon the UNCITRAL rules, doesn't it? So why didn't you show us somewhere what the language is of their adoption or their submission to the UNCITRAL rules?
In other words, all this says is that BG submitted to arbitration under the UN rules.
Well, I should point out that
when I asked you originally where I would find that, you told me it was in the language was in both briefs, but I haven't found it in yours. So.
No, I what I mentioned was that the language of the treaty is in both briefs.
What language of the treaty?
Well, it's Article 8 that we're referring to here. But
that's where we'd find it.
Yeah. You're right that we do refer to the award, which referred to the parties' agreement on the UNCITRAL rules.
But you haven't. The norm would be that questions of arbitrability would be for the court without the strict standard of review. You take it out of that, or you say it comes out of that because of the UNCITRAL rule.
That's right.
Then I ask you, when did they submit to that UNCITRAL rule? You told me it was in the briefs. I don't find it in your brief. It may be in there, but I don't find it in there. And what you cite on the subject is, doesn't speak to that.
It's the treaty, obviously, that.
Okay, now we're in the treaty, and what's the treaty's language on that?
The treaty, it's Article 8 of the treaty.
Okay, where's that in the JA or SA?
Yes, one moment, and I'll pull that for you.
And this is rather central to your case.
It is, yes, I agree.
It changes your whole standard of review.
Paragraph 89.
Okay, JA 63-64.
I don't want to say the wrong thing, so I think it's deferred appendix A182 is the treaty.
How about A65, paragraph 4? No, paragraph 5. The parties designated arbitrators in accordance with the unit trial, let's see. Number 4, because the parties failed to agree on submission of the dispute to the International Center for the Settlement of... That's Article 7, though.
Right.
We're looking for Article 21.
Right.
Yeah.
Well, on page A89, paragraph 89, both parties agree that the issue of the law applicable to the dispute is addressed in Article 8.4. 8.4 provides... In accordance with the provisions of this agreement, the laws of the contracting party, including its rules on conflict of laws, the terms of any specific agreement included, and the applicable principles of international law.
That relates to governing law, not to the applicable rules.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well,
I'll be happy to provide you with. The treaty is at, in the deferred appendix A182 and 183. So that would be where it is. A182 to 183.
Looking at Article 8?
Yes.
Is it 3B on page A183? Arbitration Rules of the United Nations Commission on International.
Yeah, that would be it.
Very well. Okay.
That talks about appointments.
Yeah.
Or establishment.
Doesn't seem to say what rules apply. And your whole arbitrability. The whole argument that this was arbitrable by the arbitrator seems to depend upon something that you have not done much to show that it applies.
What about the Henderson pointed you to 3B.
Yes.
And what about the, do you have it in front of
you? I don't have the treaty in front of me, so okay. I'm a little bit hamstrung, so I don't want to say.
Do you have the appendix?
Yeah.
It's supposed to be in the joint appendix. It is in the joint appendix.
Arrived from Dulles.
All right, at
A183. Okay, I'm sorry. Now I have the joint appendix in front of me.
Look at page A183. And Judge Henderson was pointing you to 3B?
Yes, 3B.
And you see the if after a period of 3 months?
Yeah, right after that. That's exactly right.
Okay.
Okay.
Yeah, I'm sorry that I wasn't able to point you to that right away, but that is it.
Okay.
And just to quote the language, the parties to the dispute shall be bound to submit it to arbitration under the arbitration
rules of the United Nations.
That's the language, shall be bound. That's the unmistakable language, and I'm sorry for the delay.
Okay. Well, we have taken you well past your time, so unless
Absolutely.
My colleagues have further questions, thank you, counsel.
And if you know, you want to extend additional time to
oppose. We will extend additional time if necessary.
Okay, thank you.
You had used your time, but we will give you 2 minutes for rebuttal if you wish.
Thank you, Your Honor. On the jurisdiction issue, the fundamental difference between this case and other cases is that the parties here, the bargain that was offered was first you go to local courts, and before a local judge, you discuss everything. You discuss jurisdiction and you discuss merits.
You've got is that Yunkatrol rule that says that arbitrability is for the arbitrator, and the arbitrator has ruled against you.
Yes, but first you had to go to a local judge. And actually, Article 8 starts by saying that the contracting. That the disputes that have not been amicably settled shall be submitted to the decision of the competent tribunal of the contracting party in whose territory the investment was made. And for Argentina, this was not a bizarre requirement. It's a very important condition because you give a judge the chance to express and to resolve the dispute before it's taken to an international.
The problem you get is the standard of review.
Well, in terms of standard of review, in the case of Termo Rio, which was mentioned, you have to take into account the fact that this award is subject to the laws of Washington, D.C., and therefore the review is different than if you take it to a secondary jurisdiction. Termo Rio referred to an award that was subject to the laws of Colombia. Here, you have an award that is subject to the laws of this jurisdiction, and therefore, the tribunal stated in Termo Rio that there is no restraint on the ability to control the award. And actually, this is another case from this court, Canuth versus Prescott. They also refer to manifest disregard, and where you state the law and then you proceed to ignore it. Here they stated the law and proceeded to ignore it. And let me just end by saying that in terms of the damages issue, if you leave this award stand, what you would be saying is that, for instance, the U.S. may be sued by a foreign investor for the reduction in the value of its assets just for the economic crisis and not for anything the government did with respect to that asset.
Thank you, counsel.
Thank you very much.
Committee, give us a recess.
I got it. Thanks.